Welcome to Unconcluded, an investigative podcast into the 2006 disappearance of Jennifer Kessie from Orlando, Florida. I'm Sean Gerd. Since our last episode, a whole heck of a lot has changed. My life, I'd imagine all of yours, and the entire world as a whole. Hopefully you have your health intact, and as we weather this storm of uncertainty and face the challenges of a complete disruption of our regular lives, we find a way to get through it all. Now, for me, I found myself trying to balance the roles of working remotely, being a stay-at-home parent, while also not leaving the house. Quite honestly, this podcast hadn't really been a priority for several weeks. But things have settled a bit, and as I've started to adjust, it felt like the right time to at least start a conversation. Now, about a month ago, as we had finished the previous episode, it felt like a lot of parts were moving and different paths were coming together. But we find ourselves in a different place. As I said, the world has stopped in many ways. But today we move forward, and as I sit here to record this episode right now, I'm not sure where that will end or where we'll end up. Because what I have in front of me, it feels unfinished. It feels like a page from a book and bits and pieces of a story, but it's missing context and, well, it's missing most of the story. But we'll go down that route anyways. Now, while the chaos of the pandemic has consumed all of us, I'm sure, back on March 14th, the Oxygen Channel released the Up and Vanished episode titled New Hope in Orlando, in which Payne Lindsay and crew came to Florida to work on Jennifer's case. They spoke with her family, friends, media, a retired detective, and even myself. And if you haven't had a chance to watch that episode, you can catch it streaming online, but heads up, you'll probably need a cable login. And really, it provides a good overview of the case. Although I will say, I believe some of my interview was edited together to make it sound like I was saying some things about one particular situation, when the reality was that those words have been addressed to other situations and questions. But I suppose that's the nature of television and media. Make it a better soundbite. But overall, I don't think it affected the relevance of it as a whole. Now, much of what was addressed in the television episode wasn't new. Much of it was an update of things that listeners of this podcast are well aware of. But there were a few points of interest that we can discuss, things that hadn't really been discussed before. And so today we're going to discuss one of those points, the maintenance workers at the Mosaic at Millennia. We've discussed these workers in basic and vague ways over the course of the podcast. But in the television show, the former detective assigned to Jennifer's case, and also Jennifer's brother, well, they name names. The show names two specific maintenance individuals as Chino and Ben. These names were probably new to most watching, but they weren't new to us. But we were surprised to hear them because we'd been asked a long time ago to not name Chino specifically. So while we'd been looking into him since nearly the beginning, we'd chosen to keep much of that off the podcast, not only because we'd been asked to not name the individual, but also because, well, we really hadn't found a whole lot. Now, Ben was a newer name for us, someone we'd only become more recently aware of. These guys were the maintenance men at Jennifer's condo, presumably the same guys that you've heard Drew Kessie refer to as the punch-out workers in the past. So while we have discussed them in the past, now with names being named, maybe it's time to take a harder look. So let's start with this. Up front, I don't really know much about either individual. And I'll also say that I'm not nearly as convinced or, I guess, suspicious of these two individuals as the TV show seemed to be. The show, in my opinion, pointed a pretty strong finger in their direction. I'm just not willing to do that. But since they were addressed and named, it is time to discuss them. Also, to prevent questions as I move forward, I'm not going to name either individual beyond the names that were given in the TV show, Chino and Ben. And that's for several reasons, but most important of which is I have no interest in having any part in witch hunts or accusations aimed at possibly innocent people. So we're going to stick with the nicknames that were mentioned in the show. Now, overall, we still have a lot to learn about both these individuals, but there was something that was of interest that landed in our inbox in November of 2019. So, what, 6-7 months ago? We had received a message that said, and I quote, "Hello, I lived in Mosaic in 2006 and have some information about the case." They then went on to say that they might be able to identify the person of interest. Obviously referring to the person of interest who was captured on video at the Huntington on the Green complex shortly after Jennifer's disappearance. Now, at the time that we received this message, honestly, I assumed it would be no different than the hundreds of other messages that we've received over the years, and it would turn out to be nothing more than speculation or internet rumor. But as always, we followed up. And the response was what got our attention, because at this point, the person that had contacted us mentioned the name Chino. This was a name that at the time we knew, but we'd never mentioned on the podcast, and it had never been named in the media or by the police. Again, this was 5 or 6 months ago, long before they would be named on the Up and Vanish TV show. In our initial conversations, we would come to learn that the person who had contacted us, who'd lived at the Mosaic in 2006, thought of this individual and possible connections to Jennifer Kesey's disappearance, for reasons that you'll hear shortly. Now, I'm going to tell you now, in my opinion, the reasons are thin. But intuition's a weird thing sometimes. And the fact that this person had already been somewhat on the radar obviously makes it worth considering. Now, this person that messaged us also had questions about developments in Jennifer Kesey's case that may have happened in November of 2006 because of an odd event with no explanation. And further, they felt like the girlfriend of this person, Chino, or even Chino himself, could possibly match the videos of the person of interest, as I mentioned before. So at this point, obviously, we felt that a discussion with this person was warranted. Scott actually was the one to follow up, and he was able to get in contact and speak with her for the first time way back in November of 2019. Now, in addition to this conversation, we were also sent photographs to support several of the accounts that she gave. And those photos without a doubt confirmed that she did in fact live at the Mosaic at the time that she claims. Now, we had asked to record our discussion for the podcast, but she didn't feel comfortable, so we weren't able to. Fast forward to March. With the Up and Vanish TV show coming out, we followed up and asked again to record. And this time, she agreed. True crime may be my passion, but even I need the occasional break. So when I feel like I need a mental palate cleanser, my go-to refresher is Best Fiends. The puzzles and challenges are right up my alley, but while Best Fiends has challenging puzzles, it's a casual game that anyone can play, but it's made for adults. It's also great that you can spend as much or as little time as you'd like in the game. I'm currently on level 64, and I can't wait to level up again. I hop on Best Fiends whenever I have a free moment in the day and can't wait to collect the next great bug character. I also love the bright colors and visual style, which just adds to the experience. The challenge of each new level keeps me wanting more, and it's even better with friends and family. Scott's been playing along with me for a while now. In fact, he's probably way ahead of me, and I need to catch up. I'd also love to see all of you guys joining in on the fun. Another great part about Best Fiends is that it doesn't require being online to play. So if you're stuck without great service in the subway or on a plane, you can still enjoy the strategy of figuring out each new level. It's really a unique and exciting puzzle experience, unlike any other puzzle game out there. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. So what you're about to hear is a conversation that she had with Scott just last month. But before I play that, let's set some expectations. On the surface, there is no compelling reason why either individual would seem suspicious. In fact, in some ways, it's quite the opposite. But I do think that in light of the questions that were raised by the television show, that hearing a firsthand account of the interactions with them is relevant. Well, keeping in mind that it is some 14 years later. Further, there is one little detail from the TV show. I actually missed it the first time I watched, but this detail makes everything that you're about to hear seem possibly more important. And we'll talk about that after you hear the call.
Okay, so we're being recorded now. And so why don't you just go ahead and start kind of with, you know, you may be repeating a little bit of what you told me over our last couple conversations, but why don't you kind of just lead into however you're comfortable with, how you knew them, what your interaction was with them, how often you interacted with them, how close you were with them, and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So, you know, I had a ground floor condo at the time. And being in my mid-20s, we kind of hung out on the back patio a lot, you know, just reading, playing games, drinking beers, and I got to know quite a few neighbors and also people who worked at the complex. And so people would kind of just pop by, hang out on my patio with me and with others, and we would just, we were pretty much just living it up, having a great time. But also there were two maintenance men, and they would stop by, one more so than the other. One of them was pretty friendly, and the other one was a little more standoffish. And so the one who was more friendly, Chino, he and his girlfriend would come by every so often, probably, I would say, a couple times a week, maybe, usually in the evening. But we would also see them during the day and, you know, say hi, chit-chat, and hang out for a bit. They would even come into my condo and hang out with me and my friends at the time. And it, we never really got to know them on a real personal level, but it was frequent enough that we would just, I don't know, I felt like we knew them pretty well, on the surface anyway.
What time period was this? Before you keep going, what time period was it? Like, around what date do you remember about when that was?
Yeah, so I moved in a few weeks after Jennifer became missing. And so that was February 2006. And then it was probably a good 8-9 months on a, you know, every other day basis that I would see them. And they would hang out. I mean, we would say hi and chit chat in the parking lot. But then a couple nights a week, they would come and hang out and drink beers with us and play games. And, so, I mean, it was pretty fairly often. And then I remember I always wanted to ask him about it. You know, hey, what happened to Jennifer? Do you know you were here at the time? But I never did for a variety of reasons. One, I didn't want him to think that maybe I was suspicious of him. But also I was afraid, gosh, what if he tells me something that I really have no business knowing or commenting on? And so it was just kind of like, I wanted to know, but I didn't want to know. So I never asked. And, I mean, they never brought it up. But it was sort of like the elephant in the room at the time. But he was very friendly. I was not suspicious of him at all, other than for the simple fact that he happened to be the maintenance man and worked at Mosaic when she went missing. And then another thing, the only other thing that made me suspicious was it was one night I was outside on my back patio and he pulled up. My condo kind of faced the street, and he pulled up in his truck, and there was a bunch of stuff in the back, and it was various items, boxes and like chairs and things like that. And I chit-chatted with him for a little bit and said, okay, well, good night. See you later. And then I didn't think much of it until the next morning when I actually had a maintenance issue. I called him and he didn't answer. I think I went to his condo. I had been over at his condo, like in his condo where he lived with.
We're cutting out his girlfriend's name here.
And, you know, they're gone. And I asked a couple of the neighbors that same day. I said, did you know that Chino and...
Same thing here again.
...are gone? Like, have you heard from them? Where are they? It seems like they just disappeared. And the other neighbors were going, no way. No, I just saw him. No, he would have said, hey, I'm moving out. You know, got a new job or whatever, but he never mentioned that to anybody, and she didn't either. But then again, looking back, I didn't know them as personal friends. It was very much just on the surface. So, I mean, I guess they didn't really need to, come over and say, hey, we're leaving, we're moving. Bye. Nice knowing you. But at the same time, like, we literally just saw them the night before.
So when was this?
And they didn't mention it. The first part of November in 2006.
Did you ever talk to the management about it? Did you ever ask what happened to Chino?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Nope, I never did. I didn't really interact with the management too much because I was renting from a private owner. So
okay. This
person owned that unit, and I was renting directly from her, and so I never had to interact with the management too much.
You've never seen or heard from them again? From Chino?
Correct. Correct.
What about Ben? Did you have much interaction with him at the condos? No.
I know Ben, or I knew him at the time, but he was the standoffish one. He didn't really hang out or interact. He kind of just stood back and observed. He was a little more quiet and reserved guy. Chino was definitely friendly and likable.
Can you describe Ben physically for me?
He was a big guy. In fact, I remember in my head, for whatever reason, thinking of him as Big Ben. And so he was tall and, he was, I don't want to say heavy set, but he was thick and, he had dreadlocks. Sometimes he wore them kind of wrapped up, on his head. And I remember him wearing a big baggy t-shirt, even though he was a really, really big guy. His shirt was even bigger than he was, kind of thing. And he sort of had a belly on him.
Okay. Was he an African-American man?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what about Chino? Can you describe what Chino looked like, how tall he was, that kind of stuff?
Sure. Chino is a Hispanic man. Not short, not tall. Somewhere in between, I would guess maybe around 5'9"-ish, 5'10"-ish, perhaps. Height's hard for me to gauge because I'm on the shorter side. So, but he was probably in his early 30s, maybe, when I knew him. He was fit, not in a bulky, I go to the gym mm-hmm. every day kind of way, but just you could tell that he was very active. I guess that was probably part of his job. But he was in good shape. He wasn't a ripped cut kind of dude, but he was by no means kind of chunky like Ben.
So I'm sure
he had dark black curly kind of curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
And he was more of a lighter complected Hispanic man.
Okay.
I feel like I picture him wearing a bucket hat. I think he wore a bucket hat.
So I'm sure you've seen the picture of the POI, the video of the POI from Huntington on the Green. Did you, when you've seen that, did anything jump out at you like, oh my gosh?
Yes, I've seen the video and the pictures. It's definitely not Ben. It could be Gino. I can't say that it's not.
Okay.
It very well could be. It's very possible.
So you feel like the size of that person is close?
Yes.
Do you have any other stories or anything that you heard or saw that sort of gives you pause to think that maybe they'd be capable of doing something like this?
No. Other than them completely up and disappearing, no. I can't say that I do. Chino and...
Again, removing the girlfriend's name?
Her were very friendly. I was always kind of standoffish, just because you never know. Ben was standoffish towards me. It kind of like, he almost didn't want to talk to me. And I don't know why. But no, I can't say that there was anything they ever said or did that was suspicious necessarily, other than, like I said, other than him happening to be the maintenance man there when she went missing and then leaving in the dead of night and disappearing when they had the opportunity to tell me that they were moving the day before.
So they move out. You speak to them the day before. Before that, when was the last time they did maintenance work for you? Had you had them over any time that you would have, that they could have had an opportunity at that time as well to tell you? Had it been any time recently that you had seen them before that night before they left?
I mean, well, I would see them every, you know, a couple nights a week.
Okay.
So they would have had plenty of opportunity to tell me that they were leaving, and they just never brought it up. Never mentioned it. And everybody around the complex, other neighbors, I remember at that time asking them, hey, have you seen Chino?
Girlfriend again.
They're gone? No way. Sure enough, everybody was kind of shocked.
In the documentary that aired recently, they discussed somebody witnessing some carpeting being dumped into a lake and stuff. Is that something that Chino would ever have in his truck? Did he ever have rolled up carpet in there? Is that something that he was responsible for, or was Ben responsible for that, for clearing out old carpet or anything?
I don't specifically recall seeing either one of them, either Chino or Ben, with carpeting in their truck,
mm-hmm.
but it would not have struck me as something that was out of the ordinary if it were in there.
Mm-hmm.
Since they were not contractors, so they were employed directly by Mosaic or whoever operated the complex. So they weren't involved in the major construction. They were building new buildings further on back. But they weren't involved in that. They were very much like day-to-day basic maintenance guys. They were not building the buildings. So, you know, they would come and fix a little hole in the wall or change air filters, you know, just easy stuff like that. But so, oh, sorry, to answer your question, if they had carpet in the back of their truck, it would have seemed very normal.
Okay.
And not stuck out in my head at all.
Right, because that was just a part of their job. Now, was Ben in the same type of position as Chino? Did he work for Chino? Was he underneath him? Were they each the same position? Do you recall that?
My recollection, I got the impression that Ben was kind of more of the grunt, like the helper, the sidekick, uh-huh. and Chino was the head, you know, the main maintenance guy. But okay. I don't know, because I didn't interact with Ben too much at all. He kind of made it a little clear that he didn't want to associate with me for whatever reason.
Based upon what you know and based upon the interactions that you specifically had with him, and I know it's a long time ago, do you feel like he was the type of person that could have done something like that?
I mean, I guess we've all heard it a million times, people saying, I didn't think this person was capable of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, on the surface, no, he was friendly. But mm-hmm. we all know that isn't always the truth about people. I don't know.
And the girlfriend again?
So it was very friendly too.
So when you reached out to us and you also reached out to the Kessies, I believe. Was it just the fact that you, again, had heard that the OPD was giving the case over to the Kessies and you just wanted to make sure this information was there? Was there something else that sort of, you know, spurred you into doing this or anything that you thought of, or was it just basically, I want to make sure that they have this information, whether it means anything or not?
Exactly. I just felt like they needed to know. I reported this, back in the day, after they moved out, which I found strange at the time. And then I moved out and I got to thinking, you know, that it could be nothing, and I hate to bother them with nothing. But if it were my family member, or if it were me, it could have been me. I would want to know that. I would want to know that they just randomly up and left one night in November. That's just odd. So I called the Orlando Police Department, the crime line or tip line, whatever it was back then. And I told them my story and I said, hey, it's probably nothing, but here it is. And, you know, maybe it can help. If not, I'm sorry. I hate to waste your time. And they took my statement and I gave them my contact information. They said they would call me if they had any questions. And so I kind of just left it at that. And then, you know, I remember her over the years. I didn't know her, but over the years, the case kind of stuck with me and I would periodically check in and see what was going on, and they didn't find him yet. Oh my gosh. The poor family. And then recently I heard that kind of seemed like the Orlando police didn't do anything to help find her. To help this poor family. And I saw that her dad came out and said, hey, look, if anybody called in a tip back in 2006 or 2007, whenever, they didn't write them down. They didn't follow up. Please let us know. And so I thought, oh my gosh, this whole time I thought, well, surely they know about Chino and Ben and how Chino up and left in the middle of the night without telling anybody. But maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't even follow up. Maybe they didn't tell the family about this guy. So I sent them a message and said, hey, I already told the Orlando Police Department about this a long, long, long time ago. It's probably nothing, but here it is. And that was that. And it's just, it breaks my heart. The whole time I thought they followed up on this information and, nothing, you know, I assumed nothing came of it. They never called me back or reached out again or anything. And my heart just broke when I thought, oh my gosh, the family doesn't know about this.
You had a chance to see the TV show, I know, that just aired recently. Mm-hmm. And obviously a big extensive part of that, and they sort of leave you at the end, basically that they've, you know, narrowed it down to who they think at least should be questioned. What did you think about it?
I would say it's pretty accurate. I mean, some of the dramatizations, I don't know, I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But as far as description, yeah, it seems pretty
good.
Spot on.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add? Anything that you can think of? Or, I mean, it sounds like we pretty much covered it. And we can always have a follow-up call if we need to.
Yeah, so you probably noticed I didn't mention the table. It was November 3rd, 2006, and there was a snake in the bushes by my patio, and it was a huge snake. And I called Ben and Chino to come kill it, get rid of it. And for some reason, I don't know why, I took a picture of the snake on my old school, you know, the digital cameras.
Mm-hmm.
with the screen, because we just had flip phones back then. And I hate snakes, so I don't know why I even took this picture of the snake. But I did. And Ben and Chino came and got rid of the snake for me. And that was November 3rd. And it was a few days later was when Chino pulled up in front of my condo with the truck full of crap and said, hey, do you want this table? And it was the crappy outdoor, like Walmart piece of crap patio table. And I think it was two chairs. And I was like, okay, thanks, sure. And so he took it out of the back of his truck and put it on my porch. And then the next day was when I called for a maintenance issue and
the name again.
Gone. So that's how I know when it was, because he was clearly unloading a bunch of his crap because he was moving. He knew that night that he was moving out. That's why he randomly gave me that table. We never talked about a table. I never mentioned, I really need a patio table. And then he gives me his. It was just like kind of random. So I was like, thanks, I guess. All right. So looking back, he clearly knew that he was moving out.
And that was November 6th?
That was November, it was sometime between November 3rd. So they came over and killed the snake on November 3rd, 2006.
Uh-huh.
I have a picture saved on my computer from that old digital camera, and it's dated November 10th, and the table is in the background. So
you know,
I know you
sometime between then.
It was sometime between then. Yep. So he came over, killed the snake. A couple days went by. He pulls up at my place. Hey, you want this random table? Okay, sure. Next day, boom, gone. That was between November 3rd and November 10th, where he up and left. And now I can't help but wonder, did he, because it was, the first time I ever reached out to you guys, I was just trying to like poke around and go, I wonder what spurred him to leave.
Right.
So quickly, because it was just so quick. Normally you would say, hey, friend, acquaintance, whatever, I'm moving out. Do you want this table? Right. And that's just a natural thing to say, not just want a table. Okay.
As I mentioned before, on the surface, there doesn't seem to be much here. Moving out in the middle of the night, while strange, isn't exactly a smoking gun, especially when it happens some 10 months after Jennifer's disappearance. In fact, by itself, honestly, it's almost nothing. But remember that the former detective assigned to Jennifer's case mentioned him by name on the TV show. And surely this would be for more reason than him just having moved out in the middle of the night 10 months after Jennifer's disappearance. So the firsthand account that you just heard, it does still have some value. But also remember, before I played the call, I mentioned that there was another small detail from the TV show that had changed things just a bit. Even for us, since first talking to this person in November of 2019 and now again in March 2020, our framing has changed because of this detail, which we were unaware of in our initial conversations. Remember, the person that you just heard narrowed down the middle of the night, no explanation move out to sometime in early November 2006. Well, the little detail that was relevant in the Up and Vanish TV show was a casual mention that the witness that saw a suspicious roll of carpet being thrown into Lake Fisher was specifically in, and you might be ahead of me here, November of 2006. So now we have two events, the disposal of a suspicious roll of carpet and a bizarre unannounced move taking place in the middle of the night, which match up with the same time frame. Now, surely this could be coincidence. That's absolutely possible. But regardless, it adds a different frame of thinking to both events. Now, if you're like me and we're considering putting these things together now, we do have some barriers. One is that Lake Fisher and the carpet, is that actually even related to Jennifer? That has yet to be determined. And secondly, in regards to the carpet, if we assume that connection for a moment, where was Jennifer between January and November when we have this carpet suddenly showing up? And these are just the beginning of the questions that we now have. Earlier I said, this all just still feels so incomplete. We have thoughts in every direction, and there's still so much that's missing. So we're going to leave you with that today, and plans of following it up in the next episode. Because for us, obviously, there's more to dig into and to consider. And we want to hear from you, too. What do you think about these two events? Could they be connected? And if they are, what does it mean? At the very least, today we can add some context to the Mosaic Workers, and obviously raise some new questions. And maybe we can build from there. As always, if you think you know something about the disappearance of Jennifer Kessie, the time to come forward is now. Pick up the phone and do the right thing. Now, as we are all stuck in our homes these days, we'd obviously appreciate interacting with you guys on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. All of those accounts are at Unconcluded Pod. So we hope to see you there. Don't forget to wash your hands, keep your distance, and stay healthy. Music in this episode by PC3. We'll see you next time.